when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Like a Midas touch by the very first time, I make decisions with my wallet, not my mind. Too much money for one person to control. Ooh, audacity will not buy back your soul.
Well, hello and welcome to Too Much Money, the podcast that asks, does being a billionaire make you crazy, or do you even need to be crazy to be a billionaire? I'm Dori Shafrir.
And I'm Joe Piazza. And guess what, Dori? Guess what?
What?
I'm a billionaire now.
Oh my gosh, Joe, congratulations.
Thanks. I mean, I'm lying. I wanted to change up the intro. I just wanted to mix things up a little bit.
I was so excited. It would be so fun if we became like meta. And you know, like we now could just talk about all the things that you did with your money.
Yeah. If I were a billionaire, I would give you half of it so that we could both be billionaires.
That's so nice of you. I'll give you half of mine too.
Thank you. Because being a billionaire alone seems sad.
It does seem lonely, doesn't it?
It does seem lonely. So yeah, I would want us to be billionaires together or not at all.
Totally. Now, Joe, do you remember last episode? I think it was last episode. We were talking about like what would a group of billionaires be called?
Yes. And I called them a booty.
You called them a booty, which I liked. And a listener named Tabitha wrote in to say, she says she loves the podcast, which thank you, Tabitha. And she says, how about a blight of billionaires?
I'm here for that. I like a blight. I actually like a blight of billionaires. I like that more than a booty.
So funny.
That's really good.
A blight of billionaires. Thank you, Tabitha. I really appreciated that. So Joe, today we're talking about the end of the world.
Great. You know who probably caused it? A billionaire.
Well, you know, I think before we kind of like really get into it, I'm curious if you have any like do you have any disaster preparedness tendencies? Do you have any prepper tendencies? I guess is what I'm asking.
Okay.
Because I do.
Wow. I actually saw this maybe coming from Matt, but not from you.
Oh, interesting. No, Matt kind of makes fun of me for it.
Okay. Because I don't have any. Whereas okay. Nick has lots and lots.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he has lots and lots to the extent that I think he does so many weird Google searches for prepper things. He's constantly being served Instagram ads for, like, end-of-the-world solar generators and things like that.
Yes.
And I think sometimes he plants, like, weird crops. I think they're secret potato crops. That he plants up in the Catskills sometimes, you know, for the starving period that will come after the end of the world.
Of course.
Yeah.
He wants his own food supply.
He wants his own, and it's going to be potatoes. It's going to be a lot of potatoes.
There's a lot of things you can do with potatoes. They're very versatile.
For real. Vodka among them.
Totally. Yes. You'll have your own vodka distillery.
You know, it's going to be nice.
I was not really, I'm not a prepper, but I didn't really think about disaster preparedness until I moved to California, because on the East Coast, like you kind of, for the most part, you like see the disasters coming. It's like, oh, there's a hurricane forming in the Atlantic. Like you have 5 days to get all your supplies. Whereas in California, you have maybe like 10 seconds warning of an earthquake.
Fair. I thought about the end days a lot more when I lived in San Francisco.
Right. Yes. And like wildfires and not that I live in like the middle of the city. Things would have to be very bad if there was a wildfire in my neighborhood. I don't live like on a mountain, like in a forest. But anyway, that moving here, I think just sort of like activated something.
Your prepperness, your preppery.
My preppedness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, all that said, we do not have a bunker. We do not have 5 years worth of food supplies stored there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the idea of a prepper has like entered the collective consciousness enough that people are like, there's plenty of people who are not billionaires who are preppers. Like,
totally. Yes.
Look, I mean,
they're all over. In fact, I have just started researching an Under the Influence episode about prepper talk. Because prepper talk is a big thing on TikTok these days.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
It has a lot of crossover with trad wife, homesteading wife.
Yes, I could totally see that.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see that.
So yeah. So you don't have to be. This is kind of like a math like axiom. You don't have to be a billionaire to be a prepper, and yet most billionaires are preppers.
Many billionaires are preppers. And as billionaires do, they take prepping to an extreme that I think to most of us is kind of inconceivable. So we started thinking about this story because there was a recent article, an investigation in Wired magazine that did a super deep dive into the compound that Mark Zuckerberg is building in Hawaii on the island of Kauai. And it's been like public knowledge for a few years that Mark Zuckerberg has been buying a property in Kauai. He's building something there. But like, no one really knew the extent, I think, of what he was building because he was very secretive about it. And everyone who worked on the compound had to like sign an NDA. And it was just like very, very private. But they filed some like Freedom of Information Act requests to get like the permits. And so they have a very comprehensive view of what is going on this compound. We will link to the article in the show notes because it's really interesting. It's really well done. It's worth kind of reading like the primary source. But first of all, they are estimating that the compound is costing $270 million. So
I mean, that's a drop in the bucket. For the Zuckerbergs.
It is a drop in the bucket for the Zuckerbergs, but for the rest of us, it's a nice chunk of change. But the thing that kind of like stuck out for me about this compound is that the compound includes a 5,000 square foot bunker. Wired called the whole thing an opulent techno Xanadu. Complete with underground shelter and what appears to be a blast-resistant door. Now, kind of like how you were saying, $270 million is a drop in the bucket for Mark Zuckerberg. 5,000 square feet is like a shack.
That's a shack to Mark Zuckerberg. Yeah, totally.
To me, that is like three times the size of my house. So like, I would be psyched with a 5,000 square foot bunker, but he's probably looking at this 5,000 square foot bunker being like, oh God, hope we don't have to stay in there for 2 months.
This is not big enough. This is not a big enough mansion for us.
Right. No. This is not right. Mm-mm. Exactly. So the bunker, of course, has its own energy and food supply. And on the compound, there's like two main mansions. And they are joined by a tunnel that branches off into this bunker.
Mm-hmm.
So you will be able to access the bunker from either of the mansions. There's also an escape hatch from the bunker that you can get to with a ladder. So some of the other features of this bunker The door is constructed out of metal, filled in with concrete. The compound itself has its own water tank. Mm-hmm. There's already a variety of food that the compound is 1,400 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. you know, they're
1,400.
1,400 acres. Yep. They're planting their own food.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, like, so fully, this is a self-sufficient situation.
Theoretically, yes. Which mm-hmm. we will get into. So, you know, I found the whole concept of like billionaires prepping for the end of the world to be really interesting because something that I think we're going to talk about on a future episode is billionaires' obsession with immortality and like living longer. And this feels like kind of an offshoot of that.
Yes, right? Absolutely. Absolutely. Because if you live forever, you have to plan for a lot of things changing and maybe bad things happening and probably the end of the world. So they just, they want to be prepared.
They want to be prepared and they want to insulate themselves from the chaos that they are envisioning the rest of the world descending into.
Yes.
So they will be able to insulate and isolate themselves. But there are a few problems with this vision. Which we will get into.
Wait, really? No.
Yes,
no.
I know. It's weird. It's very weird. But first, I just want to talk about a few of the other, options mm-hmm. for the very rich to create their own bunkers. Also, just as an aside, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Well, let's remind the audience who Sam Bankman-Fried is, because there's a lot of billionaire Sams.
There are a lot of billionaire Sams. So he founded FTX, the cryptocurrency exchange that went down in a blaze of inglory, I would say.
Inglory.
Inglory. But he had planned, before he was found guilty of many things. He had planned to buy an island in the Pacific called Nauru.
Oh, Nauru. Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's, you know, Nick is obsessed with Nauru. Nick's big. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Nick's billionaire obsession, if he had unlimited money.
Yes.
Would be one of them to visit all of these obscure islands. He looks at them on Google Maps mm-hmm. a lot. Now, Nauru is the one that is covered with a lot of bird guano, bird poop, right? I think that.
Oh, interesting.
I think there's issues with Nauru.
It's the world's smallest island state.
Mm-hmm.
There's fewer than 11,000 people on it. It's literally in the middle of nowhere. It's in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. It's 1,800 miles northeast of Australia. So, I mean, it is far from everything.
It's not close. Not close to other people.
So in the court filings in his money laundering case, there's documentation of how he was planning on purchasing the entire island. And that if the apocalypse happened, he and mm-hmm. his colleagues in the effective altruism movement
would move
into a bunker there. And, you know, that's where they would kind of like wait out the apocalypse. According to this memo, the strategy was, and I'm quoting now, to purchase the sovereign nation of Nauru in order to construct a bunker/shelter that would be used for some event where 50 to 99.99% of people die, to ensure that most effective altruists survive. The memo also mentioned plans to develop sensible regulation around human genetic enhancement and build a lab there, noting that perhaps, quote, there are other things it's useful to do with a sovereign country too.
Oh, that's nice. You know, these billionaires, these effective altruists, are they just completely disregarding the 11,000 citizens who live on this island? And just to do a fact check, yes, I was right about Nauru. It was once covered with so much bird poop that then turned into phosphate. And so it became a really good place for colonialists to mine for phosphate. And they essentially destroyed a large part of the island. Again, not considering the lives of the many people who inhabited this island.
Right, of course.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
So Sam Bankman-Fried wanted to buy Bird Poop Island.
So Sam Bankman-Fried wanted to buy Bird Poop Island. It's unclear, like, how far along he was in this plan.
Mm-hmm.
But it was at least discussed. The other place that very wealthy people, especially from Silicon Valley, are obsessed with to like ride out the apocalypse is New Zealand.
Yes, 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 yes. Rich people love the idea of riding out the apocalypse in New Zealand.
Yes. So Peter Thiel is one of the big New Zealand evangelists.
Mm-hmm. And you'll remember our episode from last week. Peter Thiel was one of the billionaires who also wants to bring back the woolly mammoth.
Yes, totally. Maybe in New Zealand.
Perhaps in New Zealand, my friends.
So apparently the obsession with New Zealand kind of stems from there was a libertarian manifesto called The Sovereign Individual, How to Survive and Thrive During the Collapse of the Welfare State that was published in 1997. And Thiel has cited it repeatedly as the book he is most influenced by. Peter Thiel is also obsessed with Lord of the Rings.
Again, billionaires. Billionaires, yes. Be obsessed with the same things as 10-year-old boys.
Exactly. So all of these things kind of contributed for Thiel to be interested in New Zealand. And then also New Zealand is appealing because it is a self-sufficient island state far away from the United States, where they think that like a lot of this shit is going to hit the fan. By the way, SHTF is like a prepper acronym.
For what?
For when the shit hits the fan.
Okay. Okay.
So you'll see mm-hmm. that like peppered throughout.
Prepper speak.
Prepper speak. Speak. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's take a break because
this has been a lot
to talk about. I know. And there's a lot more to discuss. All right. We'll be right back.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
during our break, I was thinking about how long I would survive during the end times. Mm. Like if this were a movie, a zombie movie or a virus movie, and I think sure. I'm gone. And I'm that person that's gone on the newsreel on the first scene. It's just like havoc hits the United States and you see me die. Just they're like, she is unprepared.
Well, one thing that very wealthy people have apparently been doing now for years is getting LASIK because they're worried about having access to their glasses after the apocalypse.
Wow.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Yes.
But LASIK also is not forever. And Nick got LASIK 20 years ago, and now it's kind of gone to shit.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. There's also, speaking of TikTok, there's also like LASIK gone wrong talk. I don't know if you've ever stumbled on this weird subculture.
No, I have not.
You know, there is a very small percentage of people for whom LASIK not only doesn't work, but like fucks up their eyesight and like, can go blind. And so as you can imagine, these people are not thrilled with what happened to them after LASIK. And even though it is a small percentage, so many people have gotten LASIK at this point that like
right there's a
thousands
lot
of people
a lot of people
this has happened
on LASIK talk bad LASIK
on,
talk
on bad LASIK talk
how
anyway that's
Bob, I didn't know
side.
Any I didn't know anything about this.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. There's apparently like very active Facebook groups about this.
Okay
so you know, we kind of touched on this in the beginning, but like, I do think it's worth kind of like parsing out just like, what is the billionaire's obsession with creating these environments where they and their, you know, they and their friends will be able to like ride out the apocalypse.
Yeah.
And Douglas Rushkoff wrote a book a couple years ago called, a couple years ago at this point, it's called Survival of the Richest.
Oh, wow.
And it all stemmed from being invited to talk to five billionaires. They like flew him out to a compound and basically just like asked him questions about the end of the world. And then he wrote an article about this and then it turned into a book. So I'm just going to quote from the book, which is worth reading if you're interested in this topic.
This sounds so good. I'm going to order it on Amazon like right now.
It's pretty fascinating. And this is his kind of like initial stab at parsing out like why they are so obsessed with this. So this is what he said. They were preparing for a digital future that had less to do with making the world a better place than it did with transcending the human condition altogether. Their extreme wealth and privilege served only to make them obsessed with insulating themselves from the very real and present danger of climate change, rising sea levels, mass migrations, global pandemics, nativist panic, and resource depletion. For them, the future of technology is about only one thing: escape from the rest of us. These people once showered the world with madly optimistic business plans for how technology might benefit human society. Now they've reduced technological progress to a video game that one of them wins by finding the escape hatch. Will it be Bezos migrating to space, Thiel to his New Zealand compound, or Zuckerberg to his virtual metaverse? This was before the
Hawaiian compound.
Of course. And these catastrophizing billionaires are the presumptive winners of the digital economy, the supposed champions of the survival of the fittest business landscape that's fueling most of this speculation to begin with.
Yeah, they're going to cause the apocalypse and then they're going to escape it. It pisses me off so much.
Right. So it's like, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried talking about effective altruism, which supposedly is supposed to be making the world a better place. I mean, not only was he fucking up his business and making people lose money, like thousands, if not millions of dollars, but also
millions
like,
of dollars. Yeah.
His plan is to just like have him and like what 20 of his closest friends surviving
on Bird Shit Island.
On Bird Shit Island. Now, one thing that Rushkoff gets into in his book that I think is such a like salient point is he says to the billionaires, like, he's like, Well, what about like the people who you're like, what about your employees?
Mm-hmm,
like, because they're talking, they're like, oh, we have Navy SEALs who are going to be like protecting our compound, and we have these people and that. And he's like, how are they going to stay loyal to you?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how are you going to ensure that in the apocalypse, they're not going to just like turn on you?
They don't. I would turn on them.
And the billionaires like kind of don't have, like, it's like, this has never occurred to them.
Right. Because physically, a lot of these billionaires are actually quite weak.
Totally. So a few years before this, Evan Osnos, who's a writer for The New Yorker, wrote a big article.
I like Evan Osnos a lot.
Yeah, he's great. Mm-hmm. He wrote a big article about, specifically about Silicon Valley tech multimillionaires / billionaires' obsession with insulating themselves from the apocalypse. And what was this, he did the reporting and the research for the article during 2016, during like the presidential campaign. And it's just very interesting to like, it seems like so long ago, like read that moment in time and kind of read about the anxieties that were springing up around that time that are now kind of the same, but also very different. Like obviously pre-pandemic, pre-Trump administration, like it's very interesting. Anyway,
2016 seems quaint in a lot of ways.
It does, right? It seems so quaint. So he points out that kind of this obsession with the apocalypse or the end times has historically has generally flourished, he says, at moments of political insecurity and rapid technological change.
Yeah. So right now
feels like, I mean, that kind of like defines our our time. He spoke to a historian at Stanford who said in the late 19th century, there were a lot of utopian novels, but they were all kind of coupled with a dystopian novel. So this has always been like a hallmark of our culture, this like desire for utopia combined with anxiety about dystopia.
Was at the end of the 19th century, was that because of the Industrial Revolution?
I think so. And also, you know, right, the Industrial Revolution. And then also, you know, this was the age when like the Andrew Carnegies, the John Rockefellers of the world were consolidating wealth. These were the robber barons.
So you start
to have the same social and economic inequality that you have today, where like the top 1% of people who have made money off of exploiting the rest of us.
And the planet.
Yeah. Right. Like they're coal mining, you know, they're making their money from oil, from coal. Like, so, you know, I think these are all things that have been set in motion a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's
interesting. Oh, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I just discovered that there is a season 2 of The Gilded Age, the TV show.
Oh.
I didn't know.
Do you like that show?
I do.
Okay.
And it's just, you know, when I like the TV show that I like watching right now is something I can watch while I'm doing something else.
Uh-huh.
So if I'm doing busy work, mixing a podcast,
or
sending out holiday cards, I don't want to pay attention too much. And The Gilded Age, which I started watching on a plane while like holding a freaking baby, is the perfect thing for that. It was the same when I started watching the new Fatal Attraction.
Like, okay.
This is the level of TV show that I'm watching right now.
Have you watched Ghosts?
No.
Okay.
I've never even heard of Ghosts.
I also started watching it on a plane.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It is the perfect kind of like entertaining background show. It's a perfect sitcom. It's a remake of a British sitcom also called Ghosts, about a couple that inherits a large, like a mansion in the American version, they inherit a mansion in like upstate New York. And so they leave their like bougie Brooklyn life behind and decide to open a B&B. But what they don't know is that the mansion is haunted. And there's all these ghosts that have been living there for, you know, centuries. And they're mad that it's going to be a B&B. And then and this happens in like halfway through the first episode. I'm not spoiling anything. The woman in the couple has like a near death experience. And from then on, she can see and talk to the ghosts.
Okay. Okay.
And so it's cool. Like, it's very, it's just like, the jokes are kind of dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like very entertaining. Did you ever watch The Other Two?
I love the other two.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, the guy, oh my God, what is his name? Brandon Scott Jones, who plays like the best friend of what's his name? The main character, the male main character.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So he's in it as like a colonial soldier who was in love with, who's secretly in love with a male British soldier, but he's been like closeted for 300 years. Like, it's just,
oh my God,
just
shut up.
It's very funny. Anyway, it just made me think of that, especially when you said you started watching on a plane.
Okay, I'm here for that. I'm here for that. So, great. Okay, guys, we're here to bring you lots of different things. Okay.
We contain multitudes, okay?
We do.
So, you know, that's kind of like the philosophical and psychological thinking behind some of this. And in Osnos's piece, he talks to a bunch of very wealthy Silicon Valley people. And Reid Hoffman, who founded LinkedIn, estimates that more than 50% of his fellow Silicon Valley billionaires have bought some sort of like hideaway. He says hideaway in the US or abroad as apocalypse insurance. And this was in 2017. So like, I feel like this is, there's probably more. And even then, I mean, you know, talking about this inequality, Hoffman talks about the anxieties that these billionaires feel that the rest of the country is going to turn against them. And is that going to be civil disorder? And like, I feel like we've seen some of that happening. Like,
because they think they're Marie Antoinette.
I mean, yeah, like they're aware that they're shitty people.
They're aware. That's the thing. Like, that's what I want to get across. That's what I want to get across in this episode, that these billionaires are at least self-aware enough to know they're shitty people, and that the majority, like the rest of us all, hate them, and that eventually we will come for them. And that's why they want to hide. It's not necessarily the new virus or the contagion. It's because they're like, yeah, we're doing shitty things and making our money in shitty ways. And people probably will come after us and try to put our heads on a stake.
Right. Yeah. Like, they will come after us with the pitchforks.
They will.
So we're going to need to like build a compound in New Zealand to avoid that.
Well, one of the things that is interesting to me, Dory, and I'm sure billionaires are like real smart and stuff, but all of their compounds are on island nations, and the rise of sea levels is a real threat.
Yes.
And the rise of a lot of very inclement, dangerous weather, which does impact these island nations, particularly Hawaii, more frequently. So when I heard that Zuckerberg was doing this bunker thing in Hawaii, I was like, maybe not the best place, Zuck.
Very interesting. Yeah, I think that's a good point. They apparently do have some anxiety about New Zealand in particular.
I mean, you know that we go up to the Catskills a lot.
Yes.
We don't have a compound or a bunker.
Sure.
But when we were looking for our like ramshackle little cabin up there, this is how much of a prepper my husband is. We bought it on a dead end road. It's a dead end road in this valley that Nick actually says sometimes, like usually after two strong IPAs from the brewery up there. He's like, you know, if we had to, we could barricade it. And I'm like, in end times? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, with what? He's like, timber.
Wow.
Okay. You and Steven, our friend down the road, can do that. But The Catskill, I will say, like, I just started to think, I'm like, maybe my husband is smarter than Mark Zuckerberg because the Catskills feel safer to me than Hawaii.
Oh, yeah, I'm with you.
Right?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't have a whole lot of weird climate disturbances up there. Yeah, Hawaii doesn't feel very safe. But, and that's cool because that maybe that'll take out Zuck. I've gotten really dark lately. Oh, I've gotten darker. Because doing this podcast actually makes me dislike billionaires more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, what is there to like?
Honestly. What is there to like? Free shipping. I was talking to a friend.
All is forgiven because of 2-day free shipping.
Exactly. Well, I was talking to a friend the other day who runs a little mom and pop specialty food store down in the Italian market here in Philly. And we were talking about shipping. And she's like, you know, what's terrible for small businesses? Can Amazon and them making everyone believe that shipping is free because it is the bulk of their costs on e-commerce. But everyone just assumes it is a public good at this point. So yet another thing.
Shipping is expensive.
Shipping is so, because I send out books all the time too to people. Right, I do so many book giveaways.
Yes. But
thank God they're for media mail because books are a little bit discounted. But it still adds up. It's still very expensive.
Also, like media mail, you have to go to the post office and actually buy the postage in person. You can't do it online, which is annoying.
I hate the post office.
I was mailing a book to my mom because I use Pirate Ship for, because I like to send secondhand clothes. Like I sell secondhand clothes and I use Pirate Ship a lot.
Yeah. What is Pirate Ship?
Oh my God, Joe. Well, you can't use it for media mail. It is discounted shipping and it is like truly discounted. Like you can get UPS and USPS and like it is much cheaper than if you're like mailing a package. I recommend.
I've never heard about this.
Oh my God. It's so great. Like it doesn't matter if you're mailing like a letter, but if you're mailing a package, you got to use Pirate Ship. This is not an ad. But Pirate Ship, if you want to sponsor us, get in touch.
Well, you
too
know,
much money podcast at Gmail.
TooMuchMoneyPodcast@gmail.com. I'm gonna go rogue and I'll send this episode to Pirate Ship and be like, hey, we just organically love you. So if you want to come on board, here's our deck.
I do organically love Pirate Ship. But anyway, I was mailing a book to my mom and I was like, I'll just go on Pirate Ship. And I was like, oh, you can't buy media mail on Anyway. Joe, let's take another break because when we come back, I want to tell you a little bit more about what these bunkers for the very rich like actually look like and entail.
I can't wait.
All right, we'll be right back.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. YahooFinance.com.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run FutureTools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of Lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Okay, we are back. When I was doing the research into these bunkers, I was kind of reminded of when we were talking about Jeff Bezos's yacht and like all the things that he has on the yacht.
Yeah. Well, the yacht, we said this, feels also like an end times plan, right? Because if ocean levels are rising as they are, probably because of all this free shipping flying around the world in Amazon planes, then a yacht will just rise with the tides.
Joe, it's funny you say that because there has been a movement. I'm trying to remember what it's called. I think it's something about being seaworthy, but there was a whole movement of people who were going to like ride out the apocalypse at sea.
Well, it was a John Cusack movie.
What movie was that?
2012, the one where the world ends in 2012 and all of the governments and billionaires have gotten together to build massive ships that will all ride out the apocalypse together. And John Cusack, Amanda Peet is his wife. John Cusack is a failed novelist because failed novelist is a big job for dudes in like action movies from the 90s. There's always a failed novelist guy who still lives in like a nice house, but sold 3 copies of his book.
Right, exactly. You're like, how does this work?
How does this work?
Well, they probably wrote some articles for Esquire for like $4 a word.
Yeah, back in the 90s, you could be a failed novelist and still make money as a writer.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so we have Mark Zuckerberg's bunker. We have all the things in New Zealand. And as I'm sure you can imagine, there have now sprung up a bunch of companies that seem specifically to be targeting very wealthy people with anxieties about the apocalypse.
Yeah, of course, obviously.
But it's hard. Here was my like skepticism / question about these is like, they don't like divulge sales figures, right? So it's hard to tell if these are just like fantasy bunkers or if people are actually buying and building these. I'm not sure. The only place that seems like people have that I could find that seems like people have bought is a place called the Survival Condo Project. Which is in Kansas and was developed by a guy who bought an underground silo that had been built by the Army Corps of Engineers to withstand a nuclear strike. And so he bought it in 2008 for $300,000. And then he spent $20 million constructing it and created 12 condos.
Underground in this
silo. And he told Evan Osnos that he had sold every unit. He had kept one for himself, but he had sold every unit. So, you know, I have no way of fact checking that, but that is what.
Right. We should go there. Dori, do you want to take a road trip?
I mean, we honestly should. He said he's building another one and that he's working on private bunkers for clients in Idaho and Texas. So this is what the Survival Condo Project entails. Food and fuel for 5 years off the grid. They're raising tilapia in fish tanks. They have hydroponic vegetables. He has SWAT team style trucks that will pick up any owner within 400 miles. And there is a place 30 miles away where a private plane could land. So the private apartments, there's private apartments, and then there's some shared amenities like in a regular condo building. So you've got a pool,
a
pool, a rock climbing wall. There's a pet park with AstroTurf. There's
shut your goddamn mouth.
Yeah.
During the end times, in the end times condo community, don't worry.
You'll have a place to walk your dog.
You'll have a place to let your dog pee.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's a classroom, there's a gym, a movie theater, a library, there's an armory. There's basically like a jail cell.
Oh, when people are dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, that makes sense. If there's a holding cell in the Eagles Stadium here in Philadelphia, which there is, then there should definitely be one there too.
Yes, there's a medical wing.
Is there a fully stocked bar?
It's funny you say that. So when Evan visited, he slept in a guest room appointed with a wet bar.
Good, good. Because during the apocalypse, I want booze.
Totally.
Like, I'm not going out gracefully.
Yeah.
It's probably, like, especially if my kids are grown, capable humans at that point, and I don't have to protect them from the zombies.
Right.
It's like, I haven't had a cigarette in a long time. I might start smoking again, and just pills, man. Booze and pills. Yeah. Exactly. I'm that end timer.
A feature of a lot of these underground projects is that they paint scenery outside of, quote, windows.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, it feels like you're, like, looking out on Central Park or a forest or whatever. So that's a survival condo project.
I don't want to live there. I don't want to live there.
I don't either. There's also a company called Opidium that is based in the Czech Republic. Their most expensive bunker model is called the Heritage, and it starts at $60 million. So as designed, it is 12,380 square feet. It has five bedrooms, seven bathrooms. There's handcrafted glass chandeliers. There's fine-grained solid wood flooring. There's fresh flowers in the garden. You can add a cinema, a swimming pool, an art gallery, a gym, a sauna. You can have staff quarters. So that's $60 million. There's also an American company called Rising S Bunkers, and they do the whole range. So they start at $49,000 for an 8x12 mini bunker.
How many? An 8x12 for us lowly peons.
Yes, exactly.
You may but have a closet, my friend.
Yes,
that you can drink your booze and eat your pills in and die. Right.
But their top of the line bunker, which is unironically called the Aristocrat, is they have a luxury series, and this is their top of the line one, costs $9.6 million. It has game rooms, sauna, gym, media room, bowling alley, gun range, pool, custom flooring and carpet, custom kitchen, multi-vehicle garage. Where are you driving? I don't know. A
greenhouse. Where are you going? You need more than one car in the apocalypse. Yes.
With what gas? Plumbing. Right. Like what? And septic systems. It can run on or off the grid. There's also an above ground safe house that looks like, they describe it as, the structure looks like an ordinary prefab building to the eye, but behind the standard sheet metal walls are bullet resistant walls made of half inch plate steel. Then there's a heavy blast door. Then you're in the safe house. There's another layer of protection for the bunker entrance. The bunker's hatch lies behind a false wall. This false wall is made from quarter inch plate steel, and its dual purpose is undetectable to the naked eye. I mean, I do think that the description of this as like a video game is apt. Like, this feels very like a lot of it is almost just for the game of it, the show of it.
Definitely for the show of it. And also, of course, you want to market it like a video game because, as we said before, billionaires have the emotional capacity of 10-year-old boys and the interests of 10-year-old boys. So, yeah, they want a bunker with a game room and a sauna that feels like a first-person shooter game because they're goddamn children inside.
Yes, yes.
I know we're nearing the end of this episode. Again, many of these billionaires are men, and I feel like women will prep for end times in different ways.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny because in this article that Evan Osnos wrote, he talked to a woman who is the CEO of a digital health startup. And she says, if I had $1 billion, I wouldn't buy a bunker. I would reinvest in civil society and civil innovation. My view is you figure out even smarter ways to make sure that something terrible doesn't happen. Which yep. I feel yep. like is yep. a good note yep. to end on, because it does seem yeah. like all yeah. of this energy could be devoted to making sure that the apocalypse doesn't happen in the first place.
Yep. Yep. Education. Let's just educate everyone, bring most people out of poverty, stop letting these tech CEOs get so fucking rich, yeah. and then maybe the apocalypse won't happen.
Right. But I think for some of these people, it's almost like a fantasy that it does happen.
I think they kind of want it to happen. Yes, they're like, you know what? People don't like me in this world. People don't like me in this world, but maybe in the next one they will. No.
1,000%. So, you know, you can, please email us at toomuchmoneypodcast@gmail.com. I forgot to say it at the top of the show, but we take feedback, we take comments, we take questions. We also take suggestions of future episodes, and we would love to hear those. Well, Joe, it's been a pleasure as always.
Always a pleasure.
Too Much Money is hosted and produced by me, Dori Shafrir, and Joe Piazza. Music is by Lisa Brenner, and our network partner is Acast. Thanks for listening. Ooh, audacity will not buy back your soul.